Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
I'm Jay Moran.
I'm Bridget Jaipal Valenza.
I'm Thomas O'Neill White.
We need to get together and let our voices be heard.
This is What's Next. A dedicated hour to have important conversations about the issues facing the marginalized and underrepresented communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario.
We're going to have some real healing. We've got to have space to tell some uncomfortable truth.
What's Next continues our mission to discuss race, equity,
and the common concerns of Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
And good morning. Welcome to What's Next. Today on What's Next, we're going to be talking about Parkinson's disease. There's a lot to get into in this, including the people who are often not diagnosed with Parkinson's. And we'll get into that in just a little bit here. But with us, I want to introduce first Nancy Nealon. Nancy is the Director of Educational and Outreach for the National Parkinson's Foundation. Nancy, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having
me. You know, Nancy, before we introduce our next guests, let's just a quick overview.
Sure.
Parkinson's disease, describe it for us, because this is a disease, and I've been finding out here how difficult it is to really understand it for not only for medical professionals, but for the people who are going through it themselves.
Absolutely. There's so much I could say right now, but I'll try and summarize and give you the main points. It is second only to Alzheimer's. It is a growing disease, mainly because of the age wave. The majority of people are diagnosed after the age of 60. It is the dopamine that is at issue here, because the dopamine in the brain is greatly reduced. We do not know why or what causes Parkinson's. No two people experience Parkinson's or PD the same. The list of non-motor symptoms far exceeds the list of motor symptoms. Most people think of tremors. They think of celebrities they see, like Michael J. Fox, right? Things. It's so much more than tremors. And at least 1 million people in the United States have Parkinson's. So you think about the people themselves, you think about family members. You know, the impact is tremendous, absolutely positively tremendous. People who are diagnosed under the age of 50, called young onset PD, less than 15% of the population. The vast majority are older adults when they are diagnosed, 60s, 70s, 80s. So there is a lot for people to figure out, and that's part of why the Parkinson's Foundation does a lot of what we do. Our whole point is to make life better for people with Parkinson's. So we've made great strides, but we know there's a long way to go.
Also with us this morning, we have Dr. Peggy Brooks Bertram. Doctor, I was familiar with your name from your work with both the Uncrowned Queens Institute and also some of your work with the Buffalo Board of Education as well. First of all, thank you for being with us today.
Okay, great.
But I didn't realize until you got here, the reason why that you did come, and we appreciate this, is that you were relatively recently diagnosed with Parkinson's, correct?
Yes.
How long ago was that?
It was in, let's see, I had a knee surgery, a knee replacement surgery in February of 2023. And it was shortly after that when I, you know, had difficulties, you know, cognitive issues and what have you. And it was thought to be related to the use of general anesthesia as opposed to regular anesthesia. And that so that really kind of launched this, you know, and that has happened in some people, you know, that the anesthesia can do that. And it was, that was really a terrible experience, because it was all, not only that it was recuperating, but it was just that the cognitive aspects of this, of Parkinson's, really kind of
And when you say cognitive, of course, you're a scholar. Are you saying that it's impacting your ability to focus on that or in other ways?
Yeah, it impacted your ability to, you know, I think clearly. I was trying to really always be rational and open with myself about what I was feeling, what I was thinking. You know, so I was constantly making notes of, you know, if I felt nauseated and what seemed to precipitate that, or if I felt like or that I couldn't sleep, you know, or that if I woke up in the morning, the very first time I opened my eyes, there was this fear and anxiety that didn't have any connection to anything I knew. So it was those kind of things that, I don't remember really how I got to the neurologist,
mm-hmm.
but I did, and we didn't talk about anything like Parkinson's, and then this sort of kind of came up, and from then on, you know, I sort of had some testing, you know, MRI, and which doesn't show you Parkinson's. But it does show you other kinds of things, you know, that you might have going on in the brain. Like if you had a previous stroke, whether it was small or large or what have you, or whether you had white matter in the brain or that sort of stuff. You know, so having traveled around looking at, you know, with my primary care doc, a neurologist, a psychoneurologist, an ophthalmologist, a gastroenterologist, you know, really, all of these things, and nothing was happening. So I don't know what's happening, what's going on here, you know.
Right.
But finally, you know, the neurologist said, look, I think you have Parkinson's, at least in a hand specialist said, yeah, I think you have Parkinson's. And my statement was, well, okay, so what do I do now, you know? And that's really how I found out. And that was like, as I said, in early part of 2023.
Yeah. Nancy, when mm-hmm. you hear Peggy talk about her situation, is that unusual?
No, not at all.
That's a common occurrence for people with Parkinson's, that they go through this. I mean, it's got to be arduous in itself, waiting to just find out a diagnosis.
Absolutely.
Why is it so difficult?
Well, first of all, there's no test. There is no blood test or MRI. Mm-hmm. It's a clinical diagnosis. So hopefully folks who are experiencing these kinds of things are referred to mm-hmm. not only neurologists, but a movement disorder specialist. So mm-hmm. that's a neurologist with advanced training mm-hmm. in movement disorders, Parkinson's being the most extensive, and Huntington's disease. Very lucky here in Buffalo, you have great movement disorder specialists, not only at UB, but also at the Dent Institute. So you have the specialists here in town. That's not true everywhere.
Okay.
So they have to watch somebody walk. Sometimes for some people with Parkinson's, they don't even realize they've stopped moving one arm when they walk. There can be stiffness. There mm-hmm. can be, they do a lot of finger tapping tests. Did they do that with you, Peggy? A lot of finger tapping?
You know, more or less like, you know, opening and closing.
Yep.
Yeah, but,
yep.
No, but no finger tapping.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
Taking family history and ruling things out. Like Peggy mentioned, she had the MRI. Perhaps that was, I don't know, I'm guessing that they did that to rule other things out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So it's not just, I know immediately. It's a long process.
Doctor, if I could ask you, I mean, if you don't mind sharing, that process, you must have named 5 or 6 different specialists when you were mm-hmm. talking about what you went through. How was that for you mentally and emotionally, trying to figure out what was going on with you?
Well, it was, first of all, I really believe that the people who saw me liked me. You know, they liked me as a person. And because I talk openly and willingly. And so I was treated very, very well. But nobody really came out and said, nobody did anything to alarm me, you know, which was good because I was already frightened, you know, on my own, but nobody did anything to make me feel frightened. And it was, as I said, there was the guy I would go to, because I had an issue with smell disorder.
Okay.
You know, so I would go to the, what's the guy?
ENT?
Yes.
Ear, nose, and throat.
Ear, nose, and throat. And so he didn't see anything wrong. You know, so it was ENT, the gastroenterologist, because I had all of my colonoscopies, you know, right on time and all of that. Never said anything. Never told me that I might have, you know, this disorder with the bowel. You know, but I thought that everybody took good care of me.
Okay.
I thought that they did, and but nobody really wanted to come out and say, I think you have Parkinson's. And nobody really wanted that to be the case. I mean, so I think people were really good with me, and but I couldn't understand how all of this got mixed, you know, nixed, so to say. You just didn't, nobody could really say, this is what is the story. And then I got referred to a guy who was a neurologist slash something else where they really tested, I guess, for like 5 or 6 hours.
Wow.
You know, recognition of things, words, objects, spaces. It was really quite an affair, you know. So I had all kinds of things done. And still no one said, you know, I think you have Parkinson's, until it was a few years later.
Oh, wow, such a long road.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that road. Maybe just also, there could be somebody listening right now, right? Who is dealing with things that could be part of this. How important is an early diagnosis? It sounds like it can take just a while to get a diagnosis.
Absolutely, absolutely. I've worked within the Parkinson's community for about 10 years, so I've talked to so many people who, once again, no two people are the same. And when one person told me, you know, I told my wife, stay home, I'm just going to see the neurologist. It's carpal tunnel.
Mm.
He had no idea that he would be walking out a few minutes later with a Parkinson's diagnosis. Mm-hmm. So how somebody gets to that point can be dramatically different.
Right.
If you just listen, the stories are just, you wonder how people really endure all that.
What about the symptoms? So what are the things that somebody should be, I mean, again, we don't want to put fear in everybody, but at the same time, if early diagnosis is important, what are the things that people should be attentive to?
Absolutely. And we, in fact, have gathered that information and have an actual document that talks about the 10 early signs for this very reason. However, I will say, if anyone's listening and you think, oh yeah, I have that, doesn't mean you're going to
sure.
get Parkinson's,
okay, right?
Right. But things that people have contributed to this, sleep issues is a big one. Difficulty sleeping, insomnia, restless legs, constipation, another significant early sign. And it doesn't mean it goes away either.
Mm-hmm.
It could be very small handwriting, mm-hmm. where your handwriting is of a normal size, but the more you write, the smaller it gets.
Okay.
Could be developing a soft voice. This voice issue is, it's, I've encountered many people with Parkinson's whose voice has just lowered tremendously. So there are a number of things. It could be a tremor too, the obvious, what people think of when they think of Parkinson's.
Right.
But there are a number of things that maybe in an isolated situation, it doesn't seem like much. But in support group after support group that I've been to, I listen to people say, yeah, I had those sleep issues for years. A gentleman I know who's a Vietnam vet, there's a huge correlation between veterans who served during that era and were exposed to Agent Orange.
Mm-hmm.
And if they are diagnosed with Parkinson's years later, it's a presumptive disability, which is used. You have a tremendous veterans advocate here in Buffalo, Patrick Welch. He is amazing. But for those individuals, and one gentleman in particular I know, he lost his sense of smell years ago. And his wife talks about cooking for texture, not taste, mm-hmm. because of that. So there, it's a long list.
Okay, but that's very good, though, but it's all worthwhile. So you heard Nancy go over that list, Doctor. You know, what about for you? What have been some of the things that you've been experiencing?
Well, I think years ago, I mean, it's been a long time. And years ago, I experienced difficulty with smell and taste. And it came out of a really, really, really stressful time. I was working with an idiot at the university. And we don't really know how disturbing, because you bring that stuff home with you.
Absolutely, you do. Yeah.
You know, and I remember really having a very hard time and was able really to help myself, because I would walk maybe an hour or two in the morning before I went to work. And, you know, so it was a long time, you know, dealing with some of these things. So that was a smell issue. And then stressful things happen. And again, you don't sleep well, or if you do sleep, you know, it's fraught with anxiety. And it's like an unknown kind of anxiety where you're just sort of afraid. And I did all kinds of things. I was looking back over my resume this morning. I said, gee, you know, I did all kinds of things, building organizations, writing books, you know, writing papers, traveling around the world and the country, doing things. I don't know how I did that.
So many accomplishments.
Wow. I did that. And I was fighting all of these things all the time, you know. And luckily, I had also a good friend, Barbara Nevigold, who, you know, who was just my good friend. She didn't know this, and neither did I, you know. So it does take a long time for somebody to say, you know, I think you might have Parkinson's, because they're really afraid to say, because it's not nice. It is not nice.
Nancy, you know, I've obviously... Peggy received a lot of care in the sense of being able to get to a variety of different specialists. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, isn't there a difficulty, though, a greater difficulty with certain groups when it comes to diagnosis, that there are a lot of reasons, a lot of different reasons, yes, why that's the case?
Yes, absolutely. And this is by no means inclusive list.
Right.
But what I have come to understand is that for particularly people in the Black community, so underrepresented in when you look at diagnosed numbers and the community as we know it. So here's what I know, and this is purely from my little corner of the world and what I've tried to discern about this. Distrust, absolutely, with the medical community, and probably bias on the part of the medical community.
Because to that, I mean, I think I only did skim surface research, but there are situations where people of color going into who had Parkinson's but didn't know it, and they were underdiagnosed because of a bias by the medical care provider, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is by no means assigning blame across the board,
no,
right?
But it does show you.
It's absolutely true. I know many, many caring movement disorder specialists, neurologists, et cetera. But yeah, time and time again, there's no doubt about it. I only have to look at support groups or my programs to know there's a real problem here.
Okay.
We know Parkinson's can occur in any race. It doesn't matter.
Right.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't hold back, right? It's not particular to a particular, men are diagnosed 1.5 times more often than women.
Okay.
So there is a big problem here. So what I've learned a woman who runs a Parkinson's organization in Philly talks about for people in the Black community that it's a matter of pride and privacy. I do not know if that is the case. That's information that I have garnered.
Sure.
Others say it's because some people just don't even know that they are that these are not supposed to be happening, right?
Mm-hmm. And back to that then, Peggy. I mean, it sounded like you endured a lot of these symptoms for some time mm-hmm. before, long before even the diagnosis finally came through.
Yeah. I experienced a number of things. And I guess because I came out of a health background, I would pay attention to it. But early on, I simply was said, that doesn't seem right. Let me go check this out and see what this is. But I also, the one thing that I did find out the most that I'm most unhappy with, and that is that you can, and I'm not a tying it to being Black or being a woman or whatever, or living in a certain neighborhood, but it's the idea that you have something that is wrong with you. And you know that it's wrong. You don't know how wrong it is, and you don't know what it is. But you talk with people about it. But because you look a certain way and present yourself in a certain way, people don't look at it as serious as it is, because you can talk about it. As I said, when people look at me, they don't see somebody who has Parkinson's.
Right.
No.
But I know that sometimes that within my speaking and talking about something, I kind of lose a train of thought, and I feel my brain, searching around to say, where was the tail end of this, So it's like I'm having, conversations, and they are conversations. They're internal conversations that people who are talking with me don't witness, but the person with Parkinson's is working very hard to stay within the realm of what's being addressed. You're working hard all the time.
Exhausting.
It is exhausting, I don't necessarily feel that everybody who looked at you and said, okay, this is Parkinson's, really understand that tiny little piece of it, is that what did it take to construct that paragraph? You know what I'm saying? What did it take? And it takes a lot. And I'm talking to you, but I'm working at another level to make sure I'm talking to you, and that I'm answering you mostly,
That's it's tremendously revealing.
It's a lot of work, because you're saying, I talked about how you can see the brain is like stepping outside of you and constructing something and showing you what it is constructing, mm-hmm. and you can see it. You can see it. It's almost like somebody working with calligraphy and there's a blank space here and all of a sudden there's a... Wow. The brain is constructing an image, like a person. Could be an animal, could be an object, those kind of things. So you're working very hard. That's the one thing that I found about that. You're working very hard. It's like a person working hard to stand up straight. It's, it's along those lines.
Whereas maybe before, you didn't have to think about it as much.
No.
But now you do.
I lectured in different places in the world on the work that I did. I would go into an auditorium with 500, 600, 1,000 people, not a single sheet of paper, just talk about the research that we're doing, whatever. I can't do that anymore. I miss that.
I bet you do.
I really miss that.
So you have it's obvious, but I want to say it. You have a great understanding because you're a scholar. You have a PhD from Johns Hopkins University. You knew what it took. That didn't come easily by any stretch of the imagination. But now what you're saying is trying to do and stay on that kind of train of thought is even more difficult.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I turned in a book recently to Oklahoma University Press. It's on the life of a woman I've been following for 20 years. I happened to find her papers and nobody else had them. And I put this together. But I want to tell you, to be able to put the whole thing together it's not now, not only that you find the material, you do the research, you find the material and you write it. Now you got to put it together, and you have to put it together in such a way that other scholars can follow it. So your job becomes even harder now, because it's harder with your brain working almost against you, you know, to make sure you got the references correct, make sure you got the order correct, make sure you don't have repetition. It's absolutely, it's incredible the difficulty with it. And then on top of that, the body, creates this kind of your fear for what might not be in what you did and how somebody will respond to it. And it's amazing. I mean, I just learned a lot about how the brain works, you know. I mean, it's just quite amazing. And so people, I don't know about anybody else, but I think you suffer a lot.
Absolutely.
With this, because it's bizarre.
Absolutely.
It really is.
Let's take a time out here on What's Next. We'll come back and continue this conversation. We really appreciate what we're hearing today from Dr. Peggy Brooks Bertram and also Nancy Nealon. This is What's Next on WBFO.
Did you know that WNED PBS is always working on great new local shows for you to watch? Documentaries like Kleinhand's Gift to Buffalo, which tells the story of Buffalo's Music Hall.
The hall is very intimate, and that intimacy makes everyone who comes in here feel a part of our family.
Fun and educational series like Compact Science.
Believe it or not, peppers are technically fruits.
And Shakespeare's greatest hits, featuring some of his best-known soliloquies and monologues.
We are such stuff as dreams are made of.
You can watch them all on our website at wned.org/local shows. While you're there, check out the show pages and mini websites for additional content such as bonus features, photo galleries, and lesson plans. Find it all at wned.org/local shows.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
Welcome back to What's Next. Our guest, Dr. Peggy Brooks Bertram, and also Nancy Nealon, Director of Educational and Outreach for the National Parkinson's Foundation. Nancy, we heard Dr. Brooks Bertram talking about her experience going into the break. And you said something as we went off mic, that the voice of the person with Parkinson's is the most powerful.
Absolutely.
Expand on that, please.
Well, how can I say it? I'm a talking head, right? I have certain knowledge. I have certain
experience.
But you
were spending time with people who are going through this. Yes.
So whenever I go anywhere, because outreach is a big part of our job, you know, reaching hopefully as many people as possible. But whenever I have the chance to partner with one of our volunteers, a person with Parkinson's, that's the most genuine you can get, right?
Right.
I can tell people about all the symptoms. I can tell people lots of information, nuggets, right? But hearing it directly from the person who's living it, there's no replacement for that.
Right.
So that's always my goal. And if I can't accomplish it, I always try and intersperse experiences or information I have that I can at least try and relay that people have shared. So that people get it, right? So people know and understand more than they did before I encountered them.
You know, Doctor, you gave us some powerful testimony about your situation before we went to break. And to hear you talk about how what you have to go through to do your scholarly work still, yet you still do it.
Yeah, I mean, I do it because I'm still learning, you know, and I like that, you know, and I know that I have discovered things that people would do better if they knew, you know, the research techniques and tactics and things like that and what you find. I mean, and being able to write about things that nobody knows about and to find documents that have been lost, you know, for a quarter of a century, if not more, to find those in the original handwriting of a person who wrote them and make that access to, you know, accessible to the public is, you know, I feel great about. But again, it's a real struggle to do it and to be able to keep it in mind, and then to express it, you know, and to see if you can respond to. I mean, like people will write notes and say, "This is an excellent book," and whatever the author needs to do A, B, C, D, and E.
Okay.
You know, and you kind of feel like, "Oh, Jesus, I don't think I can do anymore with this," you know. And so all of it gets, all of your work and your thinking about stuff gets harder, you know, it really gets harder to do, you know. And and you have these medications that you take, and the medications are structured so that, and Nancy, help me with this,
mm-hmm.
they're structured so that they kind of replace the dopamine.
Correct.
In the brain, and the and it has its problems as well.
Yes.
You know, and you can document how it's going to happen or the timing. For example, I take medications at 9 o'clock in the morning, and then again at 2 o'clock, and then again at 7 o'clock, and that's supposed to set you up for the day to be able. But there's a period in there, and I haven't figured it out yet, but there's a period in there between like 8 and 9 or 7 and 9 where you feel awful.
Hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Physically awful?
Physically awful. Emotionally awful. You don't hurt per se, but you just don't feel good. You don't feel good. But with the medication helps with that. Some people, I guess it makes them sleep, you know, and it just slows you down, you know. You just slow down a bit, and you don't quite understand things as well as you would like to. And you hear, at least for me, you know, I hear myself saying, "Okay, Peggy, here's what's going down. I know you feel like this morning, but, you know, we got this stuff to do." Or you lost something. And losing stuff and putting things places that you just wouldn't dream. Why would I put that there? You know, why would that go there? What it is, and I try to analyze what I'm going through, and I can say that what I've learned for sure about this is that if you have two things in your hand and you place them somewhere, you'll be lucky if you find them again.
Really?
And that, am I right?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
And, or, it's very interesting that you can have, you're having a lot of discussions with yourself too. And thank goodness, because it helps you along with, where did I put that? What room was I in? You know, and I can understand people having to take care of people who are suffering, you know, in another way. With this kind of problem of where did I put this? You know, what do I make of that? Or, you know, that sort of thing. It's very difficult, but that doesn't happen all the time. You know, but you just don't know when it's happening.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, and so that's why I'm saying you're working hard all the time, trying to keep
that
things.
Energy. Yeah.
Yeah, you just, it's so much energy spent in, Jesus, where did I leave that red lipstick? You know? That sort of thing. So, you know, and occasionally I have to just stop and say, "Okay, if I can look." And that's when the dog looks up at you and say, "I know where it is." Can't you see that?
We heard a doctor, like, she turned to you about how the medication to work, about the dopamine. Let's just talk about that just for a little bit, how that might, to kind of educate us on how that might go about happening.
Most people with Parkinson's, and you can see this in the pretty much anywhere it's printed in the literature, what I think what Peggy just described is what people refer to as being on, and then there are off periods, right? So once again, everybody is very different, but and Peggy also gave us her medication schedule, and that's so darn important because people with Parkinson's need their medications on time every time.
Okay.
Could have a whole other conversation about that in and of itself. Over time, and I want to be very careful here because A, I'm not a doctor or a nurse, any kind of medical, this is all information that I've absorbed, heard from people, that on time can grow a little bit shorter. And neurologists, movement disorder specialists will help people tweak their medication schedule. What most people strive for is to stay on, right? They want to take that medication in a way that will help them not feel so awful. Be able to do things, whether it's, you know, personal care, cooking, taking care of, you know, many people with Parkinson's are care partners for their, for their relatives, for their spouse, whatever. So it's so very, very important. It's such, can be such a sensitive process for folks to be able to manage that. And most, you know, the movement disorder specialists, that is their specialty, helping people evaluate that because we want people to feel. But fatigue is a real issue for people with Parkinson's. That is probably not as understood as it is, as it should be. While at the same time, Peggy's referred to it, the best medicine for people with Parkinson's is exercise and to move. Got to keep moving. Move. That is the key. Because if you don't, Parkinson's will see to it that you don't, you're not moving very well at all.
So, well, Peggy, you're here with us. And I think you even told me before that you do still a lot of walking.
Yeah.
What other kind of movements are you doing these days?
The, you know, at the Parkinson's program over at the Jewish Community Center, you know, I work privately with a trainer and using the incredible equipment, stretching, constantly stretching. Because one of the things that I notice is that it's almost like Parkinson's wants to reclaim and take over the entire physical structure, like the bones, you know, the being able to, you know, being able to stretch your arms out, you know, that that if you didn't do that, you wouldn't do it. You wouldn't be able to. So being able to open your arms wide, to be able to, I raised an issue with the trainer. I said to him when I first went there, I said, look, I said, I know that people who really have Parkinson's, big problems, could fall a lot. I want to know, how do you get up? What do you need to do to get yourself up? And that's a real problem. I mean, I've not fallen or anything like that. But I do know that, you know, reading what I've read, where people with Parkinson's fall a lot. And why do they fall a lot? Because of the joints, because of they might feel arthritic, or they, or just out of nowhere, they stop working. You know, they just stop. You think you're putting your foot down? Not necessarily. You know, and I haven't had, you know, like that issue, you know, with me, but it's because I'm aware of it all the time, and I'm trying to make sure that I don't need a cane. I don't use a cane or anything like that. I'm not afraid of walking without a cane. But I do know that you pick your feet up differently. You know, when you have Parkinson's, that you need to, I mean, part of the, you know, the trainer was explaining to me about how you start to set your feet down on the ground, you know, is different for everybody. And you really have to relearn how to walk. Because the sidewalks are a nightmare for people.
Right. Yeah. No doubt about
that's
that.
One thing. And your stair steps.
Right.
And you need to, you should have banisters on both sides. You know, like I have a 3-story house. I have banisters on both sides on every floor.
That's so good. That's so good.
You know,
so brilliant of you to think about and be proactive about fall prevention.
Yeah.
But also, there is a skill and there are techniques how to fall safely.
Mm-hmm.
If it's hard to believe, but you can get training for that. Mm-hmm. And then how do you get up? You know?
Yeah. I mean, and every time I think about how you get up, you know, I think about this woman they have on the advertisement.
Yes.
And she's at the bottom of a pair of steps saying, help me, I can't get up. And I feel like I want to say, hey, just roll over this way. Roll over. You don't have to stay there all day. You know, so, but, and learning that little things, you know, and there's some interesting things, and I haven't assessed all of them, but I like some of them. And that is, there are a number of different behaviors that people engage in. Some Chinese professionals or Japanese professionals are different kind of moves that you can use and make sure that the fingers are working and whatever.
Tai Chi?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, okay. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. And it's stuff that people should do anyhow.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, that is,
so that
is for sure.
Feel better, you know.
Yeah. How is it emotionally then for you? I mean, you know, you were talking about, so telling how you were describing kind of how you can see outside, kind of see what your brain is kind of seeing with it. But how does it feel inside the soul or the spirit to deal with this?
It's like, I am so sad about this. Mm. You know what I'm saying? I am so sad. I wouldn't have wished this on anyone. But my husband is an extraordinary person.
Yeah.
Because he's not a person that will allow you to slip down into, you know, sadness and whatever. And he calls me Pooh, and he says, okay, Pooh, let's hit it. I'm going for a walk. Just an incredible person. Just an incredible person. You know, and so that keeps, you know, that really keeps me going. But I am fascinated with, though, what happens to people. I'm fascinated with how they handle it. I'm fascinated with what kind of things they think they can do, you know, and I, like I said, I don't know anybody who has Parkinson's, but I do have my girlfriend, two of them, who, Jennifer Parker and Barbara Nevigo, who listens to these stories, you know, and Barbara has always known me, so she would have expected that I would do something like this. You know, she would say, you know, you go tell people what happened. You know, you want to do that, go do that, you know. So
that's quite commendable. We are talking with Dr. Peggy Brooks Bertram and Nancy Nealon, Director of Educational and Outreach for the National Parkinson's Foundation. We'll come back and continue this conversation. This is What's Next on WBFO.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
We are talking with Dr. Peggy Brooks Bertram and Nancy Nealon, Director of Educational and Outreach for the National Parkinson's Foundation. What did you hear inside Peggy's story right there that sounded familiar? Again, you know, like you said, you've said this right, a few times, and it's worth always mentioning, every Parkinson's case is different.
That's correct.
What do you hear inside there?
Well, one of the things that I'm so glad you're asking me, if I could take a moment, that I think it's important to address is, it would be absolutely positively so expected and so normal when someone receives a diagnosis of Parkinson's to react in a way that's like, wow, this is not fun. I don't want this. I'm depressed. Or to be extremely anxious, right?
Mm-hmm.
What we know is that, like constipation, like tremors, depression, anxiety are in fact direct symptoms of Parkinson's, right? So it's kind of a double whammy, right?
You can. So it's not that you're feeling bad or despondent because you have this. It's actually a neurological connection.
Or it could be both, too, right?
Okay. All right.
So because I think we're doing better these days, like recognizing that people's emotional and mental health is really important and it shouldn't be a taboo subject. The collective we here, people with Parkinson's are so, we encourage them, like, don't dismiss it. Don't think, oh, it's just, I'm sad. Talk to your doctors about it. There is help. We always want people with Parkinson's to know you're not alone, that there are organizations that are going to support you. There are fabulous. I've never seen something as powerful as human beings than I do when I go to Parkinson's support groups. These support groups, anyone I go to, they are just such a an engine, such a force of support. And Peggy mentioned, like, we need to have fun too, right? And I see that. I see the humor. I see the laughter. Mm-hmm. People, you know, you're looking across the table, that person gets, you know, when my food goes flying across the table because of a tremor. You know, I might be very embarrassed about it out in a restaurant. Maybe I don't even go to restaurants anymore because I'm just so self-conscious about it. But I can talk about it in here freely and openly. So I guess in hoping that this conversation reaches lots of people, also that they hear the message that you don't have to feel guilty for feeling depressed or anxious. It's, in fact, it could be very well just like any other motor, non-motor symptom that we've mentioned so far.
What, stepping outside then for a moment, for those who want to support people with Parkinson's, they're probably, it's again, you don't want to probably treat people like a China doll on one side of the coin, but at the same time, you know, there's got to be a sensitivity in here. And what are the things that you think people should understand?
I think it comes down to knowing that if someone is having a bad day, if someone is having difficulty walking or many of the other things, and I've heard this, I guess I'm now envisioning myself what I've heard in care partner groups, caregiver groups. It's important to remember it's the disease, it's not the person.
Right.
In trying to not, once again, figure out how to best cope with this, it can be really easy to lash out. Caregivers get really, it's a tough job, right? And they need to be supported in as much as possible as well. But we also just need to sometimes nudge and say, okay, he really didn't mean it that way. For some people, not everybody, but for some people, they can experience, and sometimes it's a medication side effect, but they can experience some paranoia, some anger. For some people, very difficult sleeping, and night times can be just horrendous for the care partner in particular. But we try and gently bring people back to, okay, so let's talk about what can happen. Let's remember it's Parkinson's, it's the disease. This person isn't doing this on purpose.
Peggy, what you heard Nancy talking about some of those symptoms and things that people with Parkinson's can endure or have endured. You got into a little bit, maybe off air a little bit, but also about, you know, how you aren't necessarily seeing, you know, delusional things, but at the same time, it seems like you have this kind of fascination of how it's working inside you. I almost see you working like you're one person, one Peggy's dealing with it, the other Peggy's trying to analyze.
Yeah, and I found that to be the case with me. I didn't know that something like that would happen, but it was it allowed me not to be fearful. It said, if I can understand this, I can cope with it. It's only when I don't understand something where it may get difficult. And so I was just trying to see and wanted to talk with the neurologist with what happens when this, what's going on when this happens, you know, when you see this and whatever. And I guess you can see worse things, you know. I haven't had that experience. I don't have that experience often.
Right.
And it's still very fascinating to see what happens to you. And like the whole notion of organization, for example. I must have a billion sheets of paper in my house. And at any given point in time, sometimes they can be organized, sometimes they can be disorganized.
Is that always the way, or is that a relatively recent development?
It's more, actually, I've always been disorganized.
Okay.
I mean, let's put it that way.
Okay.
But this level of disorganization is greater than I've ever known.
All right.
Ever known. And I find myself writing little notes to myself, you know, constantly saying, you know, putting a star next to something and then underlining it, you know, then putting a circle around it, maybe a box around the circle, you know, and say, what the hell does all of this mean? You know, so it's like the human being is trying to live and trying to get it right and trying to make it look okay and trying to make sure that people understand it. And I think that if this is what Parkinson's does to people, it does it 24 hours a day, you know? There's no relief from it, you know, even with medication. There's no relief.
I once heard a neurologist refer to what you're describing as the post-it note syndrome.
Yeah.
That, you know, she had worked with many people in the course of their day-to-day existence, like writing post-it notes and putting them up all around to try and remember things, to try and stay organized. It sounds very much like what you're describing.
Yeah, and it doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
No, it doesn't work.
And I'm going to put this question to first to Nancy, and then we're going to finish with Peggy. This is, you know, we've talked about this. It's been a difficult. Peggy's been very gracious and at times humorous and keeping it this as light as possible. But how about that? The thought of hope for people with Parkinson's and their families.
Absolutely. And I do hope that if anyone listening, some of these things that we talked about, the symptoms Peggy has mentioned or what I've mentioned, there is hope. And people with Parkinson's can live, you know, successfully. It's a slowly progressive disease with the right care team. And once again, people in Buffalo have access to excellent care with the right lifestyle choices. Think about actually the program Peggy goes to at the JCC is a Parkinson's Foundation community grant funded organization. Mm-hmm. We love that you're doing that. It's fabulous. Yeah. Move, exercise. Find something you like to do and do it. Diet, of course, getting the support. Those are the things that people with Parkinson's, they live successfully. So I don't want this to be doom and gloom.
No.
It is challenging. There's no doubt about it. But we will support you. Your community will support you. So reach out. Don't hesitate. Even if you're not sure, call the helpline. That's what they're there for. 800-473-4636. They will answer your questions. Our helpline specialists are phenomenal. So compassionate, so knowledgeable.
And then finally to you, Peggy, you know, you've been, again, so incredibly gracious with your time and your thoughts and your feelings. But about that to somebody, you know, like you said, you don't wish this on anybody, but,
no.
You know, this is going to happen to more and more people. What would you like to encourage those individuals and their families?
I guess I could say I know you'll get frightened, and I can understand that because it is frightening. But I think that it's also an opportunity for you to try to do things that you would never do before, that you can try things that you just wouldn't have done. And, for example, learning to swim. And I learned to swim when I was 68.
Mm. Oh my gosh, and, fabulous. Wow.
And then, and now, and I haven't done a lot of it since then, but my plan is to go back to do that and see if I can look at water differently. You know, and again, that's a new kind of movement, you know.
Yes.
And just talk to your doctor and say, look, this is the 10 things that have happened to me since I've been knowing you. Any of them look familiar to you? You know, just, you know, be...
Advocate for yourself, right?
Advocate for yourself. Yeah, because they don't know everything.
Nope.
But the people that I've seen, I've, you know, at Dent Neurology and also at Buffalo, you know, the neurologists in that network, my primary care person, the ophthalmologist, oh, they've just been, you know, they've really been wonderful to me. You know,
excellent.
Well, Doctor, thank you so much for being with us today on What's Next.
Thank you, Peggy.
Doctor Peggy Brooks Bertram with us, and also Nancy Nealon. Nancy, thank you also
thank
for being
you.
With us. This has been What's Next on WBFO.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.